Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast that helps us learn more about the women we look up to and hear more about what they've achieved, with real conversations about their real lives and real influences. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Harriet Minter. Hello and welcome, Harriet.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Great to meet you. Now, Harriet Minter is an advocate for women in leadership, a well-known journalist, a speaker at key events and a broadcaster with a new prime time, I say, in capitals, women's radio show and podcast program. That's incredible, Harriet. So you pioneered women in leadership as the founding editor for The Guardian newspaper. How did that come about?
Oh, that's a great story. So I was working at The Guardian as a sort of launch editor. So my job was to come up with new sections for The Guardian, generally specifically aimed at professional communities. So I did one for social work, one for media, one for housing, and then come up with a strategy for it, think about what the audience would want, put a team in place, get it all ready, launch it, stay with it for a couple of weeks, and then I'd go on and launch the next thing. And I'd done that for a bit, and I'd sort of run out of stuff to launch. And so I said to my boss one day, I've got this idea, I've noticed that every time I get on the tube, somebody is reading Lean In, that there's going to be a really big political push around women on boards, and that my friends and I, really what we're talking about at the moment is less our relationships and more our working lives. But all the media out there only really caters to women's personal lives rather than their professional ones. And I think there's a massive trick being missed here. My boss wasn't overly keen on the idea. He didn't really get it, didn't think it would work. So I teamed up with a coworker of mine who worked in our events team. And we decided we'd put on an event. So we'd do a kind of taster of what it could be like. She pulled together an amazing panel. And we asked another friend who worked on a different section of The Guardian to kind of advertise it. The whole thing went out, and we sold it out in a day. And when we sold it out, I sort of went to my boss, and I was like, look, I know you didn't love this idea, but we've run this event, and it's going to do really, really well. Can you just come along and see what you think? And so he came, and he was the only man in a room of 120 women. And at the end of the event, I said to him, what do you think? He was like, yeah, it was really interesting because I really enjoyed it, really liked the panel. But at the end of it, I really wanted to ask a question. But because I was the only man in the room, I felt like I couldn't. Is that what it's like to be a woman? And I sort of looked at him and I was like, well, yeah, sometimes. He's like, oh, okay, I get it now. Right, we need to do this. We need to make it happen. And 6 weeks later, we launched Women in Leadership, and that's how it came to be.
That's fantastic. But you're freelance now and you're really loving that, aren't you?
I am. I absolutely love freelance life. It's really interesting for me because I was really scared about it. I'd always believed, so my parents had their own business when I was growing up and it had been sort of massively successfully unsuccessful. Constantly sort of dying and being reborn and then dying again. And so I'd grown up really believing that if you wanted to have a successful career, you had to have somebody paying your regular salary. And if you didn't have that, that was basically sort of poverty and out on the streets. But I found myself really frustrated. I found myself really frustrated in a big organization where change takes a really long time, where people want you to be a specialist, and I'm just nosy about everything. So I wanted to be more of a generalist. And so it became more and more apparent that actually, if I wanted to do the things that I want to do, I can't really be tied down to one job. And that's a terrifying proposition when you've believed your whole life that that's the only way to succeed. So it took me about a year to get my head around that. And then I left The Guardian in July of last year. I've been freelance ever since, and it's amazing. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Wow, it's only last year and you've really embraced it. I mean, you know, literally you're everywhere. You're writing on Women in Tech for The Telegraph. You write for The Times. You've got your own column in Psychology's magazine, haven't you? And The Pool. So what's in your Psychology's column? What are the key topics affecting women?
So the Psychology's column is called Lessons in Adulthood. And it's basically all the stuff that I wish somebody had taught me when I was at school. So all those things that you suddenly learn as you become older and you're like, hang on, why did nobody tell me this earlier? And for me, most of them I've really only learnt in my 30s. I didn't learn them at all in my 20s. And so at the end of my 20s, I found myself in a bit of a kind of psychological knot because I'd had all these expectations that I'd had since a child about how my life should look and what I should be achieving and how things should work. And the reality of life is it's just never that simple. But I didn't have any coping mechanisms for working my way through that knot. And so I did spent my early 30s doing a lot of therapy, doing a lot of coaching, really learning more about myself and about what my weaknesses and strengths were and how I used those. And so the column is really a reflection on that and a reflection on the skills that we all need actually in today's world that maybe we don't learn as children. And so trying to help people find, I guess, their way through the knotty times.
You've met and interviewed some amazing female leaders, haven't you? Who is your favourite of all time?
My favourite is Arianna Huffington. I absolutely loved her. She was so great. She came in when I was working at The Guardian and we did a video interview. It was one of the first video interviews I'd ever done. I was so scared about it. And, you know, she was supposed to come in for an hour and the whole thing, I mean, she was there in the building, I think, for something like 5 hours. Not just being interviewed by me, but she then got caught by somebody else. And then they wanted to, she came in and did morning conference where she speaks to all the journalists and all this type of thing. And she was just so patient, so gracious, really fun. Like, she was so fun on the interview. I loved working with her. I'm an absolutely huge fan of her. I think her charisma and curiosity and openness just really draws you in. Yeah, she's amazing.
And are there any commonalities for these sort of incredibly high achieving women in terms of what they're concerned about?
I think the thing that I see in pretty much all high achieving women is focus. And by focus, I don't necessarily mean that they've got a goal and they go for it regardless of anything else, but just that when they make a decision, they believe in that decision and they stick with it. And so they are present in the moment. So when they decide that they are going to be in a meeting at 6 a.m., they're in that meeting and they're focused and they're ready to go and they know what they want to talk about. And when they decide that they want to take an afternoon off and go and watch their kids' football game, they take an afternoon off and they go and be completely with their family in that moment. And they're not, there's no guilt. There's no guilt on either side. And I think that ability to believe in your own choices and to be really focused about them has gone through every successful woman I've met. And then I'd say the other thing is kind of a level of grace and self-acceptance. So this doesn't apply for every successful woman, just as it wouldn't apply for every successful man. But I think the ones that I feel really have the happiest lives are the ones who have acknowledged their flaws and accept them and, again, feel no kind of need to change or adapt them, but have either worked out how to make those flaws work within their world or have learned ways to make up for them. And I think a lot of time we spend worrying about how do I be better at the stuff that I'm really, really bad at. And the most successful women I've met actually spend that time being like, okay, well, that's the stuff that I'm bad at, so how do I kind of manage that? And then how do I really focus on the stuff that I'm good at and become excellent at that? I think that's a much more positive way of looking at our skills.
Interesting. Again, yes, actually strengths and weaknesses and where there is a balance. Do you think money is the biggest hurdle stopping women from being entrepreneurs?
Oh, I think money is the biggest hurdle stopping women from doing most things, honestly. I think economic empowerment is probably the most important issue for women today, because if you have economic empowerment, then you have the ability to make your own choices and you can shape the society you live in. I feel really strongly that this is actually why women for so long haven't maybe been kind of celebrated or allowed into the positions of power that we should have been, not because we didn't have the skills or the ability, but because we literally didn't have the money to get ourselves on the bus to go to that thing, or we didn't have the ability to leave an abusive relationship, or we couldn't actually find the money to do what we want to do and look after all our family around us, because women are actually a lot of the time more economically responsible for their families as well. So I think money is a huge, huge barrier for women. It's why I get so irate about equal pay. It's why I get so irate about the fact that female dominated industries, generally the pay is lower than for male dominated industries. So I think, yes, it's a hurdle to female entrepreneurship, definitely. But I think if you are a good entrepreneur, and by being a good entrepreneur, I mean if you are somebody who has the ability to say, okay, well, what's the opportunity and what's the money within that opportunity, and then ask for it, you're going to be okay. I think actually sometimes people who are, in quotes, bad entrepreneurs are the people who have a really, really brilliant idea but don't know where the money is on it. I think you're better off as an entrepreneur being somebody who doesn't really have a great idea, but can see an opportunity and can see where the money is. So I think when it comes to entrepreneurship, it's not that money is a barrier for women, that actually that money or that lack of it is a barrier for women throughout our whole lives.
Gosh, yes. We can overcome that now. There are a few companies out there, aren't there, investing angels and business startups, especially for women. So we need to look out for that. And working from home and opportunities are becoming a bit more liberating, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. I think the flexibility issue is a really interesting one now. The fact that you don't have to be in a particular office or a city or even a country to make a business work, I think is amazing and so important for women. There are angel investors out there who specifically want to support and back women, but actually what's really interesting when you look at them is even they tend to invest less money than the companies who just back men. Which is very frustrating because actually we know that female-run businesses in their first year tend to do better than male-run businesses. What is interesting is actually seeing how more women are supporting women-backed businesses, how we're getting more interested in where our products come from, what the story is behind them, who the person is behind them. And I think that's where women have real power, which is actually to say, do you know what? No, where I put my time, effort and money, I am going to investigate and make sure that that brand aligns with my values and what I believe, and use it to support other women, not just in the UK, but actually around the whole world.
So let's talk radio. You've got a new primetime badass women's hour programme on Talk Radio. Congratulations. How did that come about?
Thank you. It's very exciting. I've never been a radio presenter before, so it's very daunting, but exciting. So it came about, actually, it was an event before it was a radio show. It started out with me and two of my friends, Emma and Nat, who are my co-hosts on the show. We thought that we could have kind of more interesting conversations than were being had. And we wanted to have conversations which took, I guess, a kind of more confident, more determined approach to life. We would do that on specific issues. And we did that for about 6 months. And about 3 months in, we were like, you know what, this is lovely, but we actually need to take these conversations to a wider audience. So let's just record them and we'll put them up as a podcast. And as you know, Nikki, like podcasting, actually the technology behind it is brilliant. You can do it very, very simply. So we did that. And then Nat, who I work with, is just brilliant because she always sees the bigger picture and the bigger ambition. And she was like, actually, we should make this a radio show. This could be a radio show. So we basically just sort of emailed everyone we knew who was in any way connected to anyone who might be connected to anyone in radio. I mean, it was about 8 degrees of separation. From that, we had a meeting with Talk Radio and they said, well, you know, we like the concept, but none of you have any experience on the radio. So we're not sure this is going to work. But tell you what, for the next 3 months, I think this was, yeah, kind of October, November time last year, the next 3 months, we will give you a studio once a week and a producer once a week. And you can record a weekly podcast with us. And we won't put it on the air, but we'll just record it as a podcast. And our producer, amazing Michael Laurie, he will kind of prep you, he'll teach you the skills, he'll show you what you need to know. And then at the end of the year, we'll see and we'll make a decision. If we think it's good enough, we'll give you a radio show. And so we kind of all decided, we were like, okay, for the next 3 months, we'll make this commitment. We'll make a commitment that we will turn up each week, and we've all got really busy lives, but we'll turn up each week and we'll record this podcast and we will learn and we will try and grow and we'll try and make it better. And at the end of it, we want a radio show and we're going to make that happen. And we got to December and they were like, oh, go on then, we love you, we can do it. And so we have a radio show on Talk Radio.
You don't just have a radio show, you have a radio show that's up for awards already and hitting the press, including the Times today, isn't it?
Yep, we were in the Sunday Times yesterday, we were in the Express yesterday, so we've done actually quite well in some PR this week. But it's really great. We have a guest each week, and so we try and find sort of like, you know, people that other women would want to hear from. We try and make sure that we cover the issues that we're interested in. So there's a news element to the show, but we don't just go really with the really big news stories. We actually go to the stuff that affects us as women, and particularly as working women, because I don't think we talk about that enough. And yeah, and people seem to like it. And we've had an amazing response to it. And it's grown really fast, which is incredible. And it keeps growing and keeps like adapting, and I'm really proud of it. I think it's one of the best things I've done.
It just shows, doesn't it? If you have a good idea, as you say. Now, when I looked at the definition of badass in the dictionary, it says tough, uncompromising and intimidating. Is that all of you?
Oh my gosh, I hope not. I mean, we're definitely tough and uncompromising. So one of the most important lessons that I've learned is to really accept who you are and not be ashamed if actually that's not for everyone. And I will happily say that I don't think our show is for everyone. I'm sure there are people out there who don't get it, who don't like it. But if you do like it, you can be in our gang and we don't really care who you are, right? So it's like, if you like it and you get us and you want to be part of us and you subscribe to our values and our ideas, then as far as we're concerned, you're one of us. And that was really the idea and kind of process that we had behind creating it. In terms of intimidating, I don't think so. I think we're really, really friendly. I'm sure people have called us intimidating in the past, but I think it's more about, it's really interesting, isn't it, that we think kind of uncompromising and tough has to be instantly intimidating. For me, I think uncompromising and tough actually says you know where you stand with that person. And that's quite a safe, secure place. So I don't think we're intimidating, but we're definitely tough and uncompromising.
It's a good thing, because it also says in the Urban Dictionary that it's being true, it's pushing for better, and it's not being posers.
Yeah, we're definitely not posers. I mean, we do something stupid and ridiculous every week because we're still learning. So, and I think we're fun. That's what I really like about Emma and Nat and why we all became friends, because we have a laugh at ourselves and we know that we are a bit ridiculous and that sometimes we care about stuff that's not worth caring about. Sometimes we just don't care about things that maybe society thinks we should. So I think there's, you know, that element of actually freedom and being able to embrace your whole self as a woman is an amazing gift that we have in 2017. And I just want to promote that to everyone.
Fabulous. We're all enjoying the show. So is it really about collaborating, do you think?
Definitely. So there's three of us on the show and the show wouldn't be doing as well if it was just one of us. Absolutely not. And that's partly because you get three people, you get three times the effort, but you also get three times the ideas. So I don't know if Emma and I would ever have made it a radio show if we hadn't had Nat with us. You know, so we think about that. But equally, if you look at the design of it, we're incredibly lucky that Emma's an incredible, talented designer. So she knew what the branding should look like. She knew how it would work. I knew how press works, so I could talk about that. It's just, by bringing the three of us together, we're so much stronger. And that has been a really interesting like lesson that I've learned whilst freelancing, because actually you think freelancers are very kind of lonely, solo people, but the best work I've done has been with other people, where I've teamed up and worked with someone on a project. And when I try and work on stuff by myself, actually it can be really tiring and really difficult. So particularly for women, because we are stronger together, if you can bring that act of collaboration into your working life, you give yourself just so many more opportunities than you would have done if it's just you trying to do it alone.
So I've read that you are personally more motivated by recognition and improvement than money.
I said that, I was like, oh, am I still that? No, I definitely think it's true. I think I wish I was more motivated by money. I'm sure my parents wish I was more motivated by money. I'm not shy about asking, so I will always ask for money. I think that's actually my duty as a woman, is to ask so that other women can also ask, and so that a precedent is set that women get paid for their work. So I don't have a problem with asking, but I don't want to be doing something that I hate for huge tons of money. Or that goes against my values for huge tons of money. I wouldn't feel comfortable. It would feel like a chore. And I talk about this difference between working hard and hard work. So I don't mind working hard. I don't mind putting in hours and effort and sweat and tears if it's something I love and that gives back to me. But I don't like stuff that feels like hard work, something that doesn't align with who I am and what I think is important. And so for me, yes, recognition is really important. I definitely get a big kick out of that. Definitely, you know, have to admit, I'm an applause addict. I love it when people say well done. But I couldn't do it just for money. It wouldn't suit me at all.
Can I ask how you feel about networking? It's not everyone's favourite, is it?
No, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. If you ever see me at a networking event, please come and talk to me, because I'll be feeling really horrible. I hate it with a passion. I think what I've learned is that what I thought networking was, which is walking into a room of 200 people where you know nobody and trying to meet as many people as you possibly can, is in fact probably the least effective form. What you're much better doing is either dealing with people one-on-one. So I tend to email people and say, you know, I really love your work. Can I get a coffee? Or I try and do it online. So I might just like try and schmooze them on Twitter for a while and then hope eventually they'll say, yes, we can have a coffee. Or if I have to go to a big event, which is about networking, I do one of two things. So I either try and be on the panel so that people know who I am, so they'll want to come and talk to me, or I try and find two people that I can help. And actually, this is a lesson that I learned from Emma Sexton on the show, where she's about treating it not as an event where you have to get something out of it, but as an event where somebody needs your help and it's your job to go and find them. And so I give myself a target, which is two people, and I try and make my way around the room to find two people that I can help in some way, shape or form. And when I've done that, then I can go home.
Wow, that sounds so much better. So what do you do if you know nobody? There's a circle of people, normally men, with their backs to you in a circle. Do you hover by the coffee machine? Do you break the circle? What do you do? Boldly go?
I usually head for the bar. That's what I usually do. But so it's really weird, actually, when you said that it's a circle of men. I hardly ever find myself in a position where it's a circle of men. I mean, just never. But I think what I try and do is, and somebody gave me a really great tip, which is actually if there are two people talking, it can be really hard to break in on two. Really, really hard. Actually, it's much easier if you can find three, because there's already a spare person in that conversation, right? So you can already kind of move your way in. I do tend to hover often by the coffee, and then I'll say to, as people come up, oh, would you like me to help you with that? Do you need some milk? And then start a conversation from that. What are you doing here today? What are you hoping to get out of it? Who are you particularly keen to see? That sort of thing. And if I really have to like break into a group, then sometimes I'm just really obvious about it and I say, I'm so sorry, I don't know anyone here. You guys look like you're having fun. Do you mind if I join you? I'm Harriet.
Interesting. In fact, I went to a networking event once that said, you know, give more than you take and never look over their shoulder to try and find someone else more interesting.
I think that's true, until there's always that horrendous moment where you are talking to someone and you're like, oh no, I can't help you, you can't help me, we have nothing in common, I need to get out of this conversation. That's always really difficult. But I think, you know, I'm quite short, so I have a literal problem, which is people can literally look over my head. I think it's a horrible process. I think if it's not working for you and you find it really stressful and miserable, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, there are millions of other people out there who don't like it. So make an effort to do stuff one-on-one. Try and find a way of doing things online. Set up your own networking event, because then you're in charge of it. And actually, when you have something to run, that makes the whole process much easier and people come to you. But if you really hate it and it's stressful, don't do it. It's okay.
Now, you mentioned you'd had coaching in your work. What sort of coaching was that?
So I've been really lucky. I've actually worked with a couple of brilliant coaches. So I worked, first of all, with Patty Fletcher, who is an executive coach and just amazing, amazing woman. She's American. She's just no BS. She's like straight down the line. I absolutely loved her. And I worked with her for a year, and that was really around my work and what I wanted to get out of it. And what she really helped me do was see that what I felt was, I was working at The Guardian at the time, and I felt very trapped in my role and that I didn't know where I was going to go or what I was going to do. And she really helped me see the steps I had to take to get out of that trapped position and held me accountable to them. And that's the amazing thing about coaching, actually. Most of the time, it's not telling you to do anything you don't know you should be doing. It's just making sure that you actually do it. So she was amazing. And then I worked with, after her, a woman called Nikki Armitage, who runs a coaching company called Electric Woman. And Nikki was just exactly what I needed at that time, because she works much more on who we are as people, and particularly for women, who you are as a woman and how you embrace that and bring all of that to the table. And I think particularly when we work in male-dominated industries, we can be really keen to kind of play down our femininity, our femaleness, and we lose track of it, and we lose track of who we are and how we behave. And so I really worked with Nikki actually about getting back to that and understanding who me at my best and most powerful self was, and how I brought her to the front at all times. So I think coaching is amazing. Everyone should do it.
Brilliant. So where do we find one, a coach or a mentor?
You can coach with me. I'm now a trained coach. So I loved it so much, so I wanted to learn how to do it. Generally, recommendations are the best thing. So if you know somebody who's had one, ask them. Most coaches will give you a free taster session. Don't ever coach with somebody that you don't have a chemistry with. You know, if you don't have a chemistry with them, they'll be feeling it too. So you might want to say to them, I like your style, but I don't feel the chemistry. Can you recommend someone else? And they probably can. You can search the International Coaching Federation, has lists of them. Most women's networks will have lists of them. If you go to pretty much any networking event, you'll meet about 10 coaches. They're all there. And also, if you admire someone, right, if you really admire someone, just keep an eye out on their kind of social media, because you might find that they have a coach that they talk about or mention as well. Like, I've just given you two. So listen out for that. But the best way is recommendations.
So everyone needs a mentor. Even Richard Branson's got one. What has been the proudest moment of your career then, Harriet?
Launching Women in Leadership was amazing. It was one of the biggest launches The Guardian had ever had, and it just grew so quickly. So I was really proud of that. Getting Sheryl Sandberg to do a live event at The Guardian was incredible. It was one of the most just awe-inspiring moments of my career. Walking out the door of The Guardian and not feeling afraid of it, not feeling scared about it, and knowing it was the right decision, that was an incredible moment. Having my first front page on The Times, that was pretty incredible. Getting a column in Psychology, that was incredible. I've had a lot of highs recently. Yeah, a lot of highs.
Wow, some serious game changers. So can we talk about your other passions? You call yourself a crazy yoga lady. And I love that when we were emailing, it made me laugh. I got an email from you, said, can't talk, I'm doing down dog at the moment.
Yeah, so I am a crazy yoga lady. So my out of office last week I was on a yoga retreat. And I try and be really honest with my out of office. So if you get me on a Friday, it'll say I'm recording my radio show. If I'm on holiday, I'll say I'm on holiday. So last week I was on this yoga retreat. So I think my out of office was I'm halfway up a mountain practicing my downward dog. I love it. So I discovered it, three years ago now. And I really hated it. I'm not naturally athletic in any way, shape or form. And it was full on power yoga, so hard and sweaty and difficult. But there was something really addictive to me about it, and the amount of mental peace and clarity it gave me. And it was sort of around the time that I was doing coaching with Nikki, and that was a lot about actually kind of acceptance of your body and its limitations and its abilities. And yoga really helped me see that and really helped me see, okay, well, I am never going to be somebody who can do a shoulder stand. You know, I do a shoulder stand and I suffocate myself with my own breasts. It doesn't work. But I might be somebody who can do a crow pose, or I might be somebody who can do a really technically beautiful downward dog. And that ability, that is something I can be proud of. And so I really just, when I want clarity, when I want calm, when I feel like there is too much going on in the world, I always go back to a yoga class.
Wow, so it really has worked for you. Have you got a mantra on living your life then, as you're a yogi?
I do. So I have the one that I talk about the most, and it's probably my favorite, is proceed until apprehended. So this, I just believe, is, you know, we ask for permission on stuff. We don't need to ask for permission. We can just do it. And if somebody doesn't like it, they will tell us, in which case we can apologize and do something else. But most of the time, if you just do it, if you just go for the thing you want, a door will open for you somewhere. So that's my favorite one. And then linked to it is a second one, which is ships are safe in harbor, but that's not what ships are made for. And I actually have like a little boat tattooed on my wrist. And that's the idea that we can all have perfectly nice lives in harbor. We can all be safe in our little areas, but that's not what we're built for. We're built for adventure and testing ourselves and going out into the wild and trying something new. And so when I feel a bit stuck, I look around my life and I think, what was the last new and exciting thing I've done? What was the last thing I've done that really, really scared me? And if it hasn't been for a while, then I try and find something.
Wow, so we're seriously learning about you. Can I see that tattoo? What about the influences? Who's been the biggest influence in your life?
My parents have had a huge influence on me, but I think the people that influence me every day, I have a group of really amazing, incredible friends, and they're the people that pick me up when I'm down and also pull me back down to earth when I get too much for myself. But I think actually it's not so much that one or two people have influenced me, it's that I've seen the amazing work done by women and men, but many women around the world, and felt, if I can just contribute to that in some way, if I can make that a little bit easier for you, or if I can push that a little bit further, then I'm going to be able to create a bigger change. And I think I'm always amazed and empowered by the human spirit and its ability to overcome anything. And that's what influences me when I see and hear those stories and think, how do I tell them more? How do I give them more space?
Well, that's beautiful. We do have some male listeners out there too that we do appreciate. So do you have any insights on how they can support women in work? Because they may have sisters, mothers, aunts, daughters, girlfriends, anything they can do to help us in the brofest, as I've heard you mention before.
Listen and listen without the need to respond. So I think all of this, and all of us, and this is not just men at all, but all of us, when we hear something that's a bit challenging, we want to go back and explain why that's not the case, explain why that's been misinterpreted or why that didn't work out exactly as it was supposed to. And actually, when it comes to women in work, the best thing you can do is listen and accept that what they are saying is their experience of the workplace. And maybe it's not the experience that you wanted them to have. Maybe it's not the experience that you think that situation was supposed to engender, but that has been their experience, and just let them tell it. So I think that's the most important thing. And then the other thing I see at the moment, which is sort of a double-edged sword, I see a lot of women's networks kind of changing their name to gender balance or, you know, something that's still gender neutral, and men getting involved with them because of that. And that's amazing and really great. But guys, get involved with them when they're women's networks, okay? It can't be about you right now. It just can't. And I'm not saying that it won't ever, never be about you. It will be at some point. But right now, it has to be about the women. And I say this to guys a lot, which is, I hear about you and you go and you get involved in these gender networks, then you start saying, well, it's really important because it's good for men too. And I'm like, yeah, it is good for men too, but wouldn't it be really wonderful if just for this moment in time, for this one period in history, women came first? I mean, that's my lesson to all men. Let the women come first.
Well, to the men listening out there, we hope you're not offended by that. Lastly, what key message would you give to inspire and influence men and women listening out there? Is there a secret to becoming an empowered leader?
Know yourself, accept yourself, like yourself, and then let other people see who you really are.
So our final message for today is that we can do what we want to do, however successful others perceive our lives to be then, really.
Absolutely. I think success is such an interesting word because we define it so narrowly, but actually it's so broad. And I think for me, real success is knowing what makes you happy and pursuing that.
Oh, so everyone do that. And I hope they're inspired, as I have been, by Harriet today. It's been lovely to meet you and really special to have this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been lovely to be here.
This Influential Women's Podcast is presented by Nikki Bannerman and co-produced with Juliet Nichols. Please keep listening for more podcasts and subscribe for free on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. And influence other men and women to download, listen, and subscribe. Thank you.